Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lindenville, we are here when you need us.
It's time for Radio Vermont's News and Public Affairs program, Open Mic with Ken Squire. Phone lines to speak with Ken are open are at 802-244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255. And here's your host, Ken Squire.
Well, thank you, McLeod.
You're very welcome. Well, good morning.
Well done. Well read and the whole deal. I've got a lot of things we're going to do today and more things tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, in the first hour, we're going to talk about ticks. Now, don't get ticked off. But this is serious stuff. And a dear friend of mine darn near died from a tick bite. And it led to his research of a whole story that I think we need to pay a lot more attention to, particularly now at this time of year for darn sure in Vermont. Because there's a commonality to this thing that stretches all the way up and down across the state. And I hope you'll join me tomorrow morning. I really think this is important kind of stuff for Vermonters. Now, we also we went down last night to Rutland. Eric put this deal together down there for the station in Rutland. And sure enough, there were troublemakers down there. Steve Costello, well, you know Paul, or little Paul up here in this part of the world. And he came right after me about our weather prognosticator, Roger Hill. And he said, I need to talk to you about him. So therefore, you knew you had to be on the defense. You get the picture. He said, that darn guy, do you remember when we had the big flood here, 5 years ago? Was it five? He said, the one guy that had it right in advance, the one guy, was that fellow that you have on WDEV. What do you think of that, McLeod?
Huh? I remember that, when he was saying everything that was right and everybody else was wrong.
Well, more than that, 5 days in advance of the federal weather, and Well, of course, you know, don't buy any of that.
Is that the time when you came in and the tree fell very close to your car?
That was the time when the tree fell down in front of the car.
That was a close one.
I was mad at Eric.
Why?
Well, because he was on stomping, storming, carrying on in the middle of the night.
Oh, yes, right.
And I thought, you know, I felt a religious duty to come down. So I'm driving down and I'm saying, what in heaven's name is he doing about with all this, right? And right up on top of Shootsville Hill, the tree came right across the road. There'd been so much water, he was right, as usual.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said, you know, no one talked about the consequence and seriousness of what that was going to be except your guy, Roger Hill. So I was greatly relieved, thankful, that it wasn't the usual. He had the weather wrong for the Red Sox.
Right.
That's always a step in the right direction. And, of course, everybody knows those Costellos. And somehow one of them escaped from Montpelier. It's down in Rutland there, Steve. It was nice to talk with him last night and so many other good folks there. I thought we'd start this morning with a news report. Do you see the Times Argus today? Front page story? Kind of business report we need.
Absolutely.
I mean, Eric had a report on that scared me almost off the road this morning. But the front page story, complete with a big photograph and the whole deal. Hardware store launches new deli. Do you see it?
It's hard to miss that one.
Well, I'll get my glasses on. It's about those entrepreneurs over there on Route 2, huh?
Plainfield
Hardware and Grocery Store. And they're diversifying with a deli, focusing on homemade and local food. And that's our friends over there, Rich and Gay, his wife, you know. And so they're not only have they opened a deli, But it isn't just a deli. The darn thing, they hired Joseph Smith. No, no, not that one from down the road there.
Yeah, wow.
The
wow.
Prophet. No, a graduate of the New England Culinary Institute in Montpelier, right there in the hardware store. You ever heard of such a thing?
Well, they have a little of everything over there already.
I guess, well, that's like Willie's store, you know.
Right.
And you know what my cousin David Rowell says about that?
A man not to be trusted?
No. Well, a man not to be trusted. No, I was talking about Willie's store.
Oh, well, yeah. I was
David says, if they don't have it, you don't need it.
That's
true. Quite emphatic about it. Same thing here. This hardware store over in Plainfield with a deli. And they're going to offer specials, and they're favoring what we produce here in Vermont. An established menu and this lovely picture of the place. So they've got breakfast dishes and pancakes and, the whole nine yards. But isn't that an interesting front page headline story? With all that we read, which is about retribution and greed and all this stuff, and by George, the front page of the Times Argus, hardware store launches New Delhi. New Delhi is usually blown up something over there. Anyway. So that was one news story. And I've got another one for the next hour. Have you heard what's going on up in well, we were talking about Willie's store. Willie's Beach, huh, in Greensboro? Oh, they've got a problem, folks. Yeah, the water may be too cold for swimming, but folks are dipping into a new project up there. There's a petition to allow nude sunning and bathing, huh, on Willie Beach. We'll get it.
That's popular.
We'll
up there,
take a closer look at this story in the next hour for darn sure.
There's those. They do that on, I think, Lake Willoughby, and then also on.
They do
one in Eden.
How did I miss that?
It's hard to miss.
Well, why didn't someone tell us? Now, there's the kind of news story you can really keep an eye on. Well, for heaven's sake. All right, we'll get to that. But the story of them, and let's stop fooling around here, the good Vermont stories. Did you hear Eric this morning on the business report?
I did.
Is he still over there monkeying around in the news department?
Yes, he is.
Oh, he is. Hey, Eric, that story you had about we've gone back to 2008, that all those banks that are too big to fail are going to screw us again. What?
Ken, I'm sorry. They're getting to the critical part here. I'm watching Rachel. They're doing ham hocks this morning.
And I
like when you're promising that WDEV is going to focus on nude beaches. I was going to say,
well,
when do we set up the camera crew?
In the interest of business, I just thought that was of consequence, and we should be paying particularly more attention to up there in Greensboro.
Well, we'll be listening to your reports so we can get to the naked truth.
I hope so. Would you just tell me that story?
The one that came out about the federal regulators?
The banks are screwing us again, just as all these politicians are telling us how they're going to straighten them out. And by George, they're doing what they did in 2008. Is that what your story was?
Well, I think you could pretty much draw a conclusion. I mean, the federal regulators are saying that five of the biggest banks, the too big to fail guys?
Like which ones?
Well, did they name them? Inadequate plans for unwinding operations in the event of failures, and potentially that would leave them unable to cope with financial distress.
They're creating themselves.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And last time, you know what happened.
Yeah. We took it in the shorts.
The taxpayers had to bail them out, yeah. It's probably another reason why we have a $19 trillion debt right now.
Hello.
J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, the Bank of New York Mellon, and State Street Bank were cited today by the Federal Reserve and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation for gaps in their bankruptcy plans known as their living wills. I think that's an appropriate use. They were required to submit the five banks among eight Wall Street behemoths whose plans have been evaluated. The two agencies found those five banks' plans are, quote, not credible, end quote, or insufficient for an orderly structuring in bankruptcy. The regulators gave the banks until October 1st to fix the problems or face more stringent requirements. And this is a bit on the heels. You might have heard this in the Times or in Fortune this week. Goldman Sachs effectively admitted it had knowingly misled investors to buy shoddy products. The investment banking giant Goldman Sachs has agreed to a list of, quote, facts, in addition to paying a $5.1 billion settlement related to a lawsuit of its handling of the mortgage-backed securities leading up to the crisis in 2007. New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who chairs the federal state working group on the mortgage meltdown, was asked if that group is finished yet with the banks.
No, there are more financial institutions out there, and our work's not done. There are other discussions ongoing with other banks. It's, you know, we get more creative with every deal, and we should expect to see more deals in the future.
New York's Attorney General, it's a definite improvement on the DOJ settlement a few years ago when Wall Street firms were simply able to get away with saying, quote, they neither admit nor deny any of the charges, end quote.
For pity's sake. Thank you, Eric. Well, there you have it. On a golden, sunshiny day in the Green Mountains, the Wizards of Washington apparently have turned the other cheek, not paid attention to what was going on, and we're right back headed for the same dilemma we had in 2008. Recession, folks, not a bloody thing we can do in Vermont except bitch and complain about the people we send to Washington. Whew. Now I feel better. I've had my rant for the day and perhaps the week. But can you imagine? Funny how time slips away, circles right back around, round two. Oh, Lord. You know what we need here is to remind people to call 877-291-8255, toll-free, Adirondacks, Green Mountains, White Mountains, and get stirred up. Well, I see where CBS has just coughed up another $8 billion for the contract on the NCAA Big Dance, all the colleges, 64, 65 of them, you know, that carve up the big dough at the end of the year for a new contract. And the current contract... Here's the interesting wrinkle here. The current contract, which will be in effect till the year 2023, is still in effect before they have to cough up the next $8 billion. Welcome to the wild, wonderful, wacky world of sports, huh? Unbelievable. It's great entertainment, that's for sure. And we certainly had a lot of fun this year, all except for me, my Temple Owls. The Temple Owls got beaten in the first round by that bunch of people from Villanova. Disappointing. That's the third time I've picked the Temple Owls to do well, and those darned Owls, they just can't get thinking straight in the first game. Enough on that. We've got some good guests coming up and some serious consequence here in hour two. Marijuana, yes or no? Where are you? How do you feel about it? That's one of the subjects for today's program. And again, I'm not kidding about this tick thing. This is more serious than we perhaps given attention to, and we need to know about it and what we can do to protect ourselves, because this is not a fun thing. This friend of mine darn near lost his life, and it's more prevalent than we know. So... You know, I'm beating the drum for my final day doing the program. I know you're saying, yay, God, thanks for small favors. What else do we have to report? Oh, the Red Sox lost last night. What an embarrassment that was, because they had it won twice, did they not, McLeod?
That's the thing, and then the opening day game, they start off well, and then they can't close the deal.
Yeah.
They get
just,
close.
They just sort of peter out about the seventh inning. Yeah.
I don't know how to fix
Ortiz
that.
Got another home run. That was dramatic. I wish we had that. That would sort of perk up the morning.
That would. Yeah. Well, we'll save it for the afternoon.
Save it
news
for the sports
service.
At
yeah, exactly.
12:15.
I don't want to steal from that.
Well, I won't steal. I mean, it just augments the favoritism that so many of us feel about David Ortiz, who told us where the monkey put the peanut back at the marathon. Remember that?
Yes.
He didn't mince any words in Fenway Park about how he felt things went down at that tragedy. Yeah, most of them, they talk in all that PR conversation, not David Ortiz. And did you hear his daughter sing the national anthem?
Incredible.
I cried.
My eyes were closed because I was resting.
Yeah.
And that voice out of that young lady?
Yeah.
Amazing.
She may have missed a couple of notes, but the fact that she sang it for her dad.
Very nice.
On his last year with that team, and he cried. I guess that's what made me cry. This great big lunk of a fella. Huh? And seems to be a very good person.
Does seem to be.
With some real thoughtful considerations of where our society is and what we need today. Mm. Oh, the other headline that I really enjoyed in the Times Argus, Women's Pay Gap Condemned. This is a story by that Joseph O'Gorman. By the way, Mr. Mitchell of the Times Argus Rutland Herald was there at the 101 party last night. Boy, he's an optimist. You know, they're getting into digital with the paper.
Oh,
with
yes.
Because everybody has to do it. I know DEV has done it. We're tickled with Jay.
Jay's amazing.
He's an amazing person. And we're finding new dimensions for how we can better make radio support the small businesses that we favor.
And it's not
we're
bad.
We're not a box store
no.
radio station. Nor will we ever. We don't fit the category, I guess.
That's nice.
And we don't care to.
Good.
We're much more interested in Willie's.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the playing field.
But this story is one that touches home, doesn't it? Occupational segregation is what they're talking about, and the right to get more money for women. Equal day pay was marked on Tuesday across the country. Well, we're going to take care of it today because we missed it yesterday, and advocating just as highly as we can that disparity needs to be looked at. It's tough sledding in a small state like Vermont. Where we are having 450,000 people, a little smaller in Albany, New York, and we've got all these roads and bridges and all of this to maintain and so forth, and try to strike a deal where small businesses can stay in business and support the communities from whence they come. 877-291-8255 if you have any good ideas or even bad ideas. But we need to share them, get them out, and talk about them as America pulls itself back together. Isn't that what those politicians are talking about all the time? Oh, we've got to grasp the country and bring it back together. And then those buffoons continue to say the same silly things they've been saying. And sometimes they sound kind of right once in a while, now and then.
How about David Ortiz for president? He tells it like it is. Of course, he probably can because of the...
That's why it's important to keep you around, McLeod.
I don't know.
Well, you know, you just keep coming
reaching.
Up with striking new ideas,
yes.
concepts that we need to consider.
Straight out of the left field. Yes.
Straight out of left field, David Ortiz. And why not? Hey, we got that silly lawyer that didn't know anything back in 1864. Who would ever think that that guy with a squeaky voice was going to amount to a darn thing? Picked a guy for vice president from up in Maine, Hannibal Hamlin, huh?
And he was homeschooled, too.
And homeschooled at that. Yeah, and particularly not well homeschooled, either. And made some pretty serious changes in how this country works. Sounds like we need to make some changes again. Now, N-O-W. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give this story away from Willie's Beach. Can you imagine the beach at Caspian Lake? No decisions have been made or action taken on a request by the Global Unification of Nude Recreation to hold its Earth Day. Well, I guess you get the picture, huh?
Couldn't we have Jay do like a webcam and we could put it on our site and our the hits would go right up?
You see, it's just another one of those thoughts from outer space,
yes.
McLeod. Saving the
suggestion.
Day. Yeah, saving the day. The major topic of the morning is going to be about marijuana, pro, con, and so forth. And there's another story coming in here at 9:30 this morning. Earl Cooper Camp and Carl Hilton Van Osdal, I hope I pronounced that correctly, are going to drop by. I think they're doing something kind of neat up in Barrie, and it would be a point well taken to get them in here and find out just how they're putting this together and what their expectations are for it. And that's supposed to happen in about 3 minutes at 9:30, correct?
Yes, and they're actually out in the hallway. So.
And they're in the hallway now.
Yeah, and they're looking, they're smiling.
Why?
Well, John Noyes.
There's nothing to smile about after you hear the news that Michael's just delivered, huh?
No, I know. Well, of course, these guys
they've
are
done
doing
it again.
Great work.
Those major guys are so gnarly, and you know, just can't find another way to start rubbing their palms together. And we know we're going to take it right in the head. Yeah, I don't like that at all. But thankfully, there's programs like Open Mic on WDEV where you can verse us with your thoughts as to how, in heaven's name, we can get the whole thing right. And we need to chat about it a lot more, and hopefully it'll strike a match. Once in a while it does, not all the time, that's for sure. But it's what's needed. We have to get together. All this business about pulling America back as one. I don't know if that'll ever be accomplished, but it's a nice thought, and it's a good place to. It'll be a part of tomorrow's program. Well, you're going to meet these first two folks that are our guests from the Granite Capital of the World. After we. Right?
Yep,
is that what we're supposed to do?
I think so.
I'm trying so much harder today after I missed the station break, and then I missed the whole end of the program. It concluded.
Well, you know, all things considered, that was.
I'm an
time.
Older person, and you don't give me enough respect for even making the effort. Just happened to miss by a minute and a half. Yeah. I mean, come on. We're not going to miss these folks. And thank you for being with us this morning. Yeah, it's the Open Mic program, and Michael Smith returns from holiday next Monday. And this is my next to last encounter with McLeod in the morning, and back tomorrow. And again, I suggest seriously, if you have folks that are outdoors people, men and women who like to get out in the out-of-doors, hike about, walk about, hunt, bird hunt, in this particular case, with an attorney actually from Barrie, who nearly died from a tick bite. And most of us, we just don't even consider that, you know, that's somewhere else. It's not somewhere else, and it's becoming more prevalent in Vermont. So we're going to take an hour on that tomorrow, and I hope you'll all join us for that. So the Reverend Earl Cooper Camp and the Reverend Hilton Van Osdal?
Correct.
Is that correct? Yeah.
That's it.
And you're both from Barrie.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Well, you guys have created something here that developed some optimism in all the gray, greasy news that we get out of everywhere we turn, seemingly. You fellows have started some kind of an ecumenical deal up in Barrie that sounds like it might strike a match. And which one of you wants to tee off here? And you must say who you are. So
this is Carl Hilton Van Osdal. I'm the pastor at the First Presbyterian Church in Barrie. We're the Green Church.
Uh-huh. And you are?
Yes, Earl Cooper Camp. I'm the rector of Church of the Good Shepherd, which is the Episcopal Church, also known as the Stone Church in Barrie.
Oh, sure.
One of the nice things in Barrie is that we're really known by our architectural styles, the Green Church, the White Church, the Red Door Church, the Stone Church, rather than our denominational differences, and I really appreciate that.
And here's the other thing. You're both young. You don't look like preachers. You know, a preacher is supposed to be old people that, you know, have a Bible in one hand and the wrath of God in the other.
Well, we have the Bible and the joy of the Spirit, which I think makes a real difference. We're really very, very pleased to be able to share the love of God and just so amazed at the way our churches have come together. And we've got big plans. So I think Carl can talk a little bit about what bigs for Barrie.
Well, we want to know the big plans. This is the deal.
So we did a little bit of digging around just in the last couple of days to get some historical perspective about the group that we call the Big Group, which is the Barry Interfaith Group. It was back in the fall of 2010 that a group of us got together just as the weather was starting to turn, and we realized that there were going to be cold people in our community in central Vermont, and we wanted to figure out a way to try to provide some warm space for people.
Mm-hmm.
So we got together with a group of about a half dozen folk from mainly from church communities and from Washington County Mental Health, a couple of other organizations, and we put out a little map of the community and looked at places that were open during the day and ways that we might try to sort of piece together, like a puzzle, piece together warm places where folks could be so that they didn't have to be out in the cold during the winter back in 2010.
So for this little crack in the business of taking care of people in the winter
was our beginning point.
And where did it go?
Well, so we formed a working group, and we opened what were called warming centers at that point.
Yeah.
So we relied on a number of partners in the community. We knew that many folks that we would serve would be folks that were already housed. Some folks were guests at the Good Samaritan Haven, which is the homeless shelter in Barry, the Central Vermont Homeless Shelter. And we knew that they'd have a place to be during the evening. We pulled out the library schedule, and we knew that the library could serve as a partner in providing a space for folks to be. But I believe it was after the market crashed in 2008 that funding became tighter for a number of organizations. The library scaled back some of their hours.
You're absolutely right. 2008, yep. And the one that gets hit first are the people that need the most help.
So we started a little patchwork, and different churches all stepped forward and said
together,
that they wanted to be part of the work
together
to create space for folks.
How's it working?
Oh, it's wonderful.
This is the voice of Earl Cooper Camp.
This is Earl Cooper Camp. Yeah. So we've got the Congregational Church, the Unitarian Universalist Church in Barry, the Methodist Church, the Salvation Army, the Presbyterian Church, the Episcopal Church. Enough Ministries, which is a wonderful, relatively new congregation in Barry. And so we serve people every morning, beginning 6:30, 7 in the morning, through about 10 o'clock or so. And then either they can stay with us or go off to the library as the weather gets better. And we've developed great relationships with people and seen lives changed, which is, to me, the amazing part. Just having a meal together, having that time to, you know, sit over a bowl of oatmeal or, you know, a plate of warm eggs. It's a time to talk, find out, you know, why somebody is in the situation there is, what can happen to change that, and to develop those relationships, which has made a real difference. All the institutions such as Washington County Mental Health, the Good Samaritan Haven, the Aldrich Library have been great partners working with us as well on this. So I'm so pleased to say that the way anywhere between 50, 60, 70 people will be there at breakfast, and you really get a chance to really talk with people. And it's not just church members serving. People from the community are really helping out. Even those who are in need find ways to, you know, wash some dishes, ways to serve some food, even bring in food to share if they've got something. Fella that has been coming to our breakfast for a long time, formerly homeless, now, thank God, got good housing, brought in a couple of honeydew melons that he got a hold of yesterday and says, we're going to have those for breakfast on Thursday. So the amount of sharing and caring, just the love that we see is just incredible.
But it's an ecumenical thing, and it's not just talk the talk, it's walk the walk.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How far are you going to go on this walk?
Well, so we'll see. The little subtitle of the Barry Interfaith Group, the Big Group, is Faith Made Actionable. So our faith's important, and being able to put it into action is important as well. So the Barry Interfaith Group works primarily around a couple of issues. One is hunger, and one is homelessness. So there's a lot of work that's being done around the food provision for people. We live in central Vermont. There's no shortage of food. We've just, you know, realized that it's about access to food. That's, you know, part of the dilemma that people face is how to access it. And also then just how we can create opportunities in the community to be a conduit for people to share. Just this morning, there's a new bagel shop in town in Barrie that opened up, and Dustin, the owner of Maria's Bagels, came in just with, you know, arms full of bags of bagels. They've been delivering some to us for a few months now, but he came in as the owner came in for the first time, and he said, "I've lived in Barrie for my whole life, and I didn't know this sort of thing was going on." You know, a place where people, probably, would you say half of which are homeless and half of which are folks that are just trying to stretch their dollars? So by the end of the month especially, we see numbers rise and people are looking for a place to find food and find the kind of fellowship that Earl was talking about. But other people in the community just want to figure out a way that they can contribute also, because like I was saying, there's food there and there's resource there. It's just giving people the opportunity to plug into sharing, basically.
Well, some people are critical of Barrie because it has become a conduit as well, they feel, for homeless people, that they focus in on that community and it has to do more than others because of that. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that this is Earl again, and one of the things we're I'm very proud of, I've been in Barrie, it'll be 4 years in June now, is that during this time we've managed to have provision for homelessness so that, you know, together with the work being done in Barrie by the Good Samaritan, by the churches, nobody has frozen to death. Now, that's a low bar to clear, but we want to clear that bar. Now we're really looking at a larger campaign. Part of what we do as well is we're part of a community organizing effort called Vermont Interfaith Action, working together with congregations in Montpelier, and then throughout the state we have members. We're starting a campaign that we're going to kick off on April 26th at 5:30 at Christ Church in Montpelier at 64 State Street. It's going to be a campaign called Ending Homelessness in Washington County by 2020. And we really want this campaign to be where we have the vision as the churches, out of our faith, and we know the power of God, we can make things happen like that. And it's a big vision, a big lift. But it's not just simply a matter of saying, okay, well, we've got a lot of homeless. Well, how are we going to do something about it? 30 years ago, churches in central Vermont, especially in Barrie and Montpelier, got together and got the Good Samaritan Haven, the homeless shelter, put together. And that's a great thing, but we want to move beyond just simply providing shelter, actually making sure everybody has a roof of their own over their heads. And
well, they need a job.
That's part of it. We're working on, we've got the Department of Labor coming into our breakfast on an occasional basis. They're going to be visiting at the Good Shepherd on the 26th of, 25th of April. And so we're starting to work with some of the young people there who don't have jobs, who, you know, get them into job training, get them into the kinds of certification they need. I'm, you know, really happy about that. We're also working for those who are disabled. You know, can we make sure that there's enough subsidy so that they can afford the rents? Also, starting to see how can we work with local landlords as well to make sure that they're that they know that, you know, that they can open up their apartments, and there's going to be people who have a relationship. It's not just going to be them and a tenant who might be, you know, a little dicey, you know, hasn't had a, you know, good housing history, but there's going to be people who can support those formerly homeless people with the landlord. There was a great meeting at the Aldrich Library just last week. Carl could talk a little bit about that, and there were landlords there, and I think
I'd like to hear about it.
Yeah.
The Barrie Democrats had coordinated a forum on homelessness, and there were a variety of different people that spoke at that forum. James Taffel, who's the principal at the Barrie City Elementary and Middle School, was one of the speakers. Mary Moulton, who's the current executive director of Washington County Mental Health. Couple of people who have been experiencing and living in a situation of homelessness spoke and discussed all the different realities of the homeless community in Barrie, discussed some of the reality of people who choose for a variety of reasons to just live independently and kind of, you know, camp out in the woods. There are, you know, a dozen or so people probably within central Vermont that make that kind of choice around, you know, finding a place to rest their head at night. And there was an amazing turnout. I think they expected maybe 12 to 15 people to come out for that forum, and there were upwards of 50 or 60 people that came out.
Really?
Both professionals that work in the field, sort of the human service field, interested parties in the community, and landlords as well.
Formerly homeless people.
Yeah, formerly homeless folks. Yeah, so good turnout. And so there are a series of gatherings that are happening. This next one's the one that Earl spoke about that Vermont Interfaith Action's coordinating on April 26th. And there'll be, you know, subsequent conversations, because there one of the things that we've experienced in Barrie specifically, Central Vermont more generally, I think, is that there had been a real sense of different people within organizations sort of sticking to their silos and sort of doing things, you know, with their people, but not necessarily collaborating as well. And it seems like in the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a real push toward collaboration.
Okay, so we've got to take a break. You're getting a turnout, and the issue becomes, what will these people turn in? Mm-hmm. What I want to know about the goals, and I think everyone does. We're so overtaxed in this state in every which way, and so many good people tithe religiously, and I think that's a fair statement.
That's a fair statement.
It just seems as though there's a lot being done here, and what's the result? We'll get to that right after this. All right, we're here with Earl Cooper Camp and Carl Hilton Van Osdal, and somewhat of a new concept. You know, we talk about all the good things that churches do, but when you collect 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, put them all together, what are you going to get out of this, gentlemen?
I think we're really finding the way, the excitement in the community in Barrie, Montpelier, throughout Central Vermont, excitement about this vision. Can we, you know, it's a large lift. Can we end homelessness? And we've seen that we've gone from literally just worrying about the whole situation of having homeless people, not knowing what to do, to developing relationships with a lot of different people, opening up our churches to the community, inviting the community in, really reaching out to the community at the same time, and seeing changes in people's lives. One young woman who was homeless here in the community, living at the shelter, she's now got a full-time job. She's working and had several promotions in this time, has an apartment, and is literally religious about coming to church every Sunday morning, 9 o'clock for the Bible study, and then staying for the service, and a contributing member of our congregation now. And her life has gone from, you know, 0 to 60 in the matter of, you know, six, seven months now.
Hold the phone. Fred in Waitsfield wants in. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Ken, and good morning, Earl and Carl. Bless you. Bless the both of you and all the folks that are working with you and doing this tremendous thing. My question is, do you have any idea how many military veterans that you would be serving? And I'll listen offline.
Yeah, there's not been a number, but we're very aware of the fact that we need to watch out for veterans. And we're aware also working with the Veterans Association and the Vermont Veterans Services. There is a wonderful program in Northfield that houses formerly homeless vets. Yeah. And we do keep in contact. There are a few people who I know who are vets, and I've offered them to, you know, make the contact with the VA. It's a very important thing where people have, you know, given, you know, literally of their lives and their service to us, to make sure we make special efforts to take care of them. And Carl has a bit more to say.
Just to piggyback on that, a couple of our key leaders, volunteers at our breakfast, and one of the outreach ministers in town is also a veteran. And so usually when we come across people that come forward and share that part of their life story with us, we have good places to refer them to and connect them up with folks that have been in similar situations.
And there's a specific contact and contract manner in Northfield?
That's yes, correct. The veterans' home is there.
Huh, okay.
Houses, I believe, about a dozen people, but other people would know the exact figure better than I would.
Well, that's news. You know, I feel kind of ignorant about this subject, and the fact that it's being addressed, and you're doing it collectively, not individually, but collectively, is fascinating.
Yeah. There's just so much more energy like that. We share so many of the same values, and those values are values that we, you know, give thanks for, and we celebrate, and we really inculcate in our lives on Sunday morning. But that's why the Berry Interfaith Group Big is so amazing, because it's making faith actionable, and this is taking those faith values that we have and putting them into practice Monday morning at 6:30 all the way through Saturday morning. And it gives us that real chance that when we work together, we find so much more in common. We find, for example, you know, this work's not always easy. Sometimes, you know, there'll be an individual who's very problematic. Well, we could share our experiences with that, you know, with that individual. Maybe, okay, this is something that I found that she can do that's actually good, or this is how we keep her calm when she starts, you know, flying off the handle a little bit. So, you know, we can commiserate when things are difficult together, but it really, those relationships that we form between ourselves and our congregations, and then that we share with those others in our community, that makes this work so much stronger, so much more joyful, so much deeper.
877-291-8255 in the Adirondacks, the White Mountains, and the Green Mountains. You're more than we'd like you to share in whatever we have for conversation. But this is a little bit different than what usually you guys are regaling us with what you're trying to do within your own church. And the idea that you've put a group of you together who might have been at sword's point in the past, seems to be the right direction for the modern church.
It does. There are ways that we've drawn in a variety of people, I think partly because of the ecumenical nature of things. And things aren't, the one thing that always comes to mind for me is that things aren't very turfy amongst the churches. We just put the vision of trying to embody God's love and serve before the needs of a particular local congregation. And then people get drawn into that. It's a drawing force. One of the groups that's gotten specifically connected to our community meals is through the local high school in Barrie, Spalding High School. They have a dynamite student council group currently that is always looking for these amazing opportunities to serve. And so one of the things that these young people have done that I can say I don't think Earl or I would have done, but they get out of bed at about 6 o'clock on Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, Thursday morning, and they go in pairs or three people to each of our congregations, and they're there to, you know, crack
no
eggs.
No kid gets out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. What
exactly,
are you talking about?
Exactly. It's incredible. So they'll come and spend an hour before they get to Spalding. Most of the kids that help out either need to get to Spalding for band or chorus, which starts at 7:30, so they're going to put in an hour before that, or if they go to the regular start time at 8:25, they, you know, serve us in that way.
So how long is this, 2 years you've been at this?
Well, we've been at it pretty actively for about 6 years.
Oh, 6 years. Okay. Yeah. So what's happened within your individual churches? Are you seeing growth? Or are you staying established where you've been? What's happening here?
Yes, sir. Our church has stayed stable. So despite some people moving out, some people unfortunately going, moving on to glory, we have gotten new members and new members through our community outreach and new members of people who, like I mentioned, the one young woman who, you know, was formerly homeless and now a good taxpaying citizen of Barrie and a good, you know, very faithful member of the Church of the Good Shepherd. We want to see growth. That's why we're trying every opportunity to, you know, get out, get the word out. And also, I think it's so important to then have people who know about this, who can support us in any way possible, and especially, quite frankly, this work starts in prayer as well, and just knowing that the community knows about this and they know what to pray for us, and then come join us when we pray together as well. Occasionally, during the year, our churches also get together for what we call union services. We started in the summer, and then recently we've
branched. A union service?
Yeah, union service.
You go over to the hall?
Not where we all come together as a big union of fellow Christians and people of good faith. And we've you know, really celebrated what we're doing together. So just the Sunday after Easter, we all came over to Good Shepherd together. We're really just standing room only, and just really,
really?
Wonderful.
Because so many
fellowship.
Churches are empty, empty.
Yeah, well,
and
well,
more so.
Yeah, well, we're not always standing room only. I don't mean to say that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
When we all come together, and it was just such a powerful, but such a joyful witness to, you know, the Easter season, and, you know, giving God thanks for and being able to celebrate the good things in our lives.
And I was going to say that, this is Carl speaking now, that being church is about gathering on Sunday mornings for worship, and being church is also about gathering for meals as a community. And one of the things that we connect into in terms of some groundings in our scripture is that over and over again, it's exactly around the times that people are breaking bread that people experience a sense of community, and they somehow see God more clearly. And so although we don't stand up and, you know, preach a 15-minute sermon before breakfast begin, we end up with opportunities to, you know, share stories or some spiritual insight or some practice of prayer, you know, different things that we can give people. I always think of them as just like little spiritual tools for the tool belt, you know, as you go around the day. So when something comes up where you need some resource to gain a little bit of peace or a little bit of calm or a little bit of connection, that you can find that.
Well, some of us concur that there is a power greater than ourselves, but seeing it collectively come together is a little bit different than what we usually come across when we talk about church. So I want to thank the Reverend Earl Cooper Camp at 212-280-6826 and the Reverend Carl Hilton Van Osdal. Do I pronounce it
right?
That's
exactly right.
802-272-4037. They're both from Barrie, and they're both on fire, as you can see. And trying to do good work in a different way than we've heard before. Thanks so much for coming by. We did get to Wednesday, didn't we?
Huh? Yes. Yeah. Halfway through the week, good thing.
So David Goodman's here at 1 o'clock today?
Yes, as far as I know.
Well, I wonder, because he and his sister, Amy, have written a new book. And I know that they're on a cross-country 30-town, 30-city appearance.
Oh.
You know,
Artie's saying no, he's not here.
He's not here.
Yeah, Artie was shaking
his
head.
Is it recorded or is someone coming in?
Well, Artie went over there. So.
Oh, okay.
Well. I guess he's taking care. He pointed to himself. Oh, I think maybe it's going to be Artie early, the getaway early.
Oh.
He was pointing to himself.
Oh. Oh.
So
the getaway gets away an hour earlier today?
I think so. I got to get the talk media, I think they're calling. Yeah, hang on.
I beg your pardon, folks. You know, this should have been done professionally. All the production meetings we hold are, well, for pity's sake. Anyway, you're listening to You Know What. It's the open mic program on WDEV. And this is always the hour when we really get tickled and go down to Washington, D.C. and find out just what in heaven's name they're doing down there. Or we try to. It's part of... Oh, is it Ellen again? Have I got her 2 days in a row? I've hit the quinella.
Bro, Ken.
Good morning.
How's that?
I didn't hear it because you were...
You had me 2 days in a row.
2 days in a row, Ellen. Is the news any better today than it was yesterday?
Well, it isn't. You know what's interesting? I've been getting calls from people saying, well, Paul Krugman wrote a great article about why Bernie Sanders is sort of a one-note Annie. And what's fascinating about that is the left press has really criticized Paul Krugman on this.
Really? Well, what's
oh,
in
yeah.
that article? Forgive me.
Krugman basically says, you know, he doesn't really have a plan. He's sort of a one-note Annie, et cetera. And the articles say that Krugman is in the Hillary camp and is not basically paying attention to what Bernie's saying. It's a fascinating fight.
Well, it sounds like MSNBC and Fox, because they're concurring. Now they're agreeing about Bernie. That gives me hope that maybe something's happening. And you get there's some diametric opposition there.
Well, that's for sure.
What is going to happen here?
I don't have my prediction hat on. I have no idea what's going to happen. I know that Bernie is doing better in New York than people think that he was going to do. Originally, there was, you know, like a 30-point spread, but it is catching up.
Hmm.
The other issue is, if Hillary gets the nomination, will young people leave their homes to vote? And that's the question.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did in the case of Obama. There was no question that was part of the driving force there, and it seems once again there's a singular and far more singular focus out of our fellow from Vermont, Bernie, who hasn't changed, I don't think, an iota since we first heard him running for mayor. You know, we all got kind of bored for a while. Yeah, but it took hold. It got traction with Tom Hartman, and here we are. I was shocked that Hillary came up with this cockamamie cock-a-doodle-doo about the guns in New York are coming from Vermont, where Bernie is coming from.
What well, I think Bernie will have an answer prepared for the debate, which is happening tomorrow night on CNN.
Oh, it's on CNN?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, that, yes. What's his name? The fellow that was the prognosticator and then had the morning Sunday program, right? Yeah.
Who's that?
Well, they're now their lead guy, but he came from another.
I'm not familiar with CNN. You know, what do I know?
Well, what do
all
you
I know?
Know
is the debate's going to be there.
Okay.
Anderson Cooper, is that the guy that's running
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's correct.
Some other news.
Yes.
Is Paul Ryan said he is absolutely not going to do a White House run this time. But everybody thinks he is getting ready, and I report for a Wisconsin station. They think he's getting ready for 2020 or 2024, that's what he has his sights on, and he doesn't think he could win this, so he's not going to run.
Okay.
So that's on that
front. What else is new?
Okay. It is interesting that Charles Grassley met with Judge Garland yesterday. Grassley is down. He's running for re-election. He is down in Iowa because of this, but he is not moving. He signed an agreement saying that he was not going to have hearings, and I guess he's going to keep to it, if he loses the election over
there. Now tell us who Grassley is.
Charles Grassley is head of the Judiciary Committee, and he is from Iowa. He's a senator from Iowa who is running for re-election.
Okay.
Okay, and he's no spring chicken like me.
Now there's a vision. Okay, let's go to page four.
Okay, page four, North Carolina. Now this is very, very interesting. The governor is a Republican. He is running against the attorney general, who is a Democrat. The attorney general says he is not going to enforce this new anti-gay law. What is interesting is that yesterday, given that so many companies are pulling out of North Carolina, the governor signed an executive order changing some of this law. The problem is with this law is that it does not change gender in bathrooms and does not change that a city council or town council can do their own discrimination law. So this is very interesting because right now, if you were born female and I have transitioned to male and you have a beard, you must use the women's bathroom, the gender of your birth. But women are not going to want to see men with a beard coming into the women's bathroom.
Hello? I mean, what kind of breaking news is that, for heaven's sake?
Well, apparently the governor's executive order does not change that. I also have a friend that I was involved in gay rights with from 1970.
Yeah.
She was on the cover of the Charlotte Observer,
mm-hmm.
Trying to get a law passed, which apparently it did, in Charlotte, saying there will be non-discrimination. But now the local laws don't count, and only the discriminatory law in the state counts. Individual precincts or areas or governments cannot make their own non-discrimination laws in the state of North Carolina.
How did we get so far off the pitch? Where the pitcher is, with this whole conversation about who can go in the boys' room and who can go in the girls' room. Hello?
I have no idea, but who cares?
Exactly.
In that way. I mean, people do care, but why are we focusing on that?
Well, because we can't
in 2016.
We can't handle the big stuff.
I guess not.
Huh? That's what do we know? But it seems kind of weird that we're into this kind of a conversation. For pity's sake, straighten out. Anything else?
Yeah, one last thing today. The president promoted equal pay and women's equality. He dedicated this Belmont Seawall House, or Seawall Belmont House, which was the site of a lot of activity to get women's rights to vote. He said that he hopes women have an ability to understand how difficult it was to get people to vote. There was, in fact, a woman named Alice Paul who did a demonstration in front of the White House every day for years, I guess, with other people to get women the right to vote. But it's interesting, they did somebody just recently released a study showing that even though Donna Shalala runs the Clinton Foundation, that there is an equal disparity in pay there's disparity in pay between women executives and male executives in the Clinton Foundation.
Whoops.
Exactly.
You're kidding.
No.
Okay. Well, we've just heard from Helen Happiness here this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We always enjoy hearing from you, Ellen, and the cadre that you have down there. It helps so much around the country to have somebody just speak right up and speak right out about what in God's name they're trying to get done. And we look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you.
Bye. Isn't she a piece?
Quite the lady.
She is something, yeah. And she's tough.
She is.
She's as tough as she sounds when she talks.
But if you saw her, she's...
She's a tiny person.
Yeah,
But a big bark.
Definitely. Formative.
Yeah, I think so. And we got to hear from some other people that are talking, because the rest of this...
It's a tough one.
I wonder... You wonder where we're going. I mean, if Donald Trump, and it certainly appears that he's going to get it done, doesn't it? Certainly appears.
I'm kind of excited about the when they get to the conventions, that something actually might go on instead of a 1 week, you know who the candidate's going to be, and then just that ongoing promotion. What if they mix it up a little bit? Why is that bad?
Well, I'm sick and tired of it.
Well, I agree with that.
And I must tell you, you go back to Harry Truman. Do you know when Harry Truman started his campaign to be president, when he ran against Tom Dewey? September.
What a sigh September. Of relief that must have been.
He got on the train, yep. Stood on the back with Bess and his daughter, and spoke to the nation across...
Margaret,
and
right?
That was Margaret, yeah, the yep. Singer. It wasn't very good. But she was a good person, don't get me wrong.
Well, don't let Harry hear you say that.
You know, if you enjoy atonal opera stars, she was terrific. Anyway, that was his campaign, and Dewey then duplicated it. He got a train, and he went around. September, October, vote in November. What's wrong with people that they have to start 2 years in advance, waste the money, waste the time, take the focus off what we need to hear? We're back. The final hour of open mic. And Mike is open to suggestions starting back on Tuesday. Hester Fuller will be here on Monday. And again, if you're just joining us today, we've had a sprightly first hour. Right, McLeod?
It was wonderful.
Yeah, well, it was interesting.
A lot going on those beaches.
Yeah. Well, that we'll get to that. That's the killer story of the day. Apparently, a Tickle Naked Pond has nothing on Caspian Lake. What?
Absolutely. Well,
nude
you never know.
Sunbathing?
It's more common than you think.
It is?
I think so.
What beaches do you go to?
Well, I just know these things are.
Never mind.
Deer Camp is up there, so.
I see.
Now, that says it all, doesn't it?
At the Deer Camp?
We just know where to go.
I don't need to know more
about that. No, I know. We've gone too far already.
So what we do need to know more about are the plains and simple truths in involving the marijuana thing. And so we brought in two that are opposites into the studio this morning. Matt Simon from the Marijuana Policy Project, who says the plain and simple truth is that alcohol fuels violent behavior. Marijuana does not. Alcohol contributes to literally millions of acts of violence. It's a major contributing factor, crimes, domestic violence, sexual assault, so forth. There's simply no causal link to be found. And he took that from a quote, which we can talk to him about. And Matt Simon, I'm sure all of you have heard and heard him before on WDEV because of his concern about the use of marijuana in the state of Vermont, and thinking that we're going to save money and be able to progress to a better place in our civilization by legalizing this. So there you have it. Who wants to go first?
Well, I'd love to go first.
You're Matt Simon.
Yes, I am.
All right.
And to be clear, that the quote that you read is from a former police chief, a retired police chief from Seattle, Washington.
Thank you.
He's a member of a group called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Yeah.
It's a growing movement of former law enforcement professionals who agree that the war on marijuana has not been a successful policy, and that we could achieve better results by trying to regulate marijuana, take it away from the drug dealers, the cartels, and the gangs, and have it be regulated, have consumers know what they're getting, and to use some of that money to educate, to do better prevention, drug treatment, things like that.
And that is what makes Matt Simon light up.
No, hold on. So, Ken, I think your notes are wrong. I'm Kevin Ellis, and I'm
You're right.
And I'm the lobbyist against this wrong-headed law.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. And I knew that, and I had it right here.
Don't worry about it.
Now I'm wondering, you're right. Lobbyist for SAM Action, Smart Approaches to Marijuana.
I'm scarred for life by that misidentification.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm sorry. Forgive me. So you just think it's a bad idea?
Yes. So Smart Approaches to Marijuana is a coalition of, prevention people, education people, law enforcement. And, we think it's a bad idea. We think if you legalize and commercialize this, we think use rates are going to go up. And we think it's bad for kids. And it's going to be more available than ever. So, yes, I think it's a bad idea. I don't think it's the direction that Vermont should go or wants to go. However, and we can get to this later, I do think there's some common ground. And it's,
really?
Yeah, I do. I think there's, on issues of decriminalization, on issues of, should we be putting people in jail for possessing marijuana? I think one benefit of this debate has been that, we're starting to realize that the criminal justice system has been not doing a good job over the past decades. We shouldn't be putting people in jail for 25 years for possessing marijuana, but I don't think that's the issue. The issue for us is we're not doing a good enough job educating people about its costs and its effect on young people and the cost to society overall. And so we should continue studying the issue, but I don't think we should pass the bill.
Not pass the bill.
Well, Kevin, I'd certainly agree that decriminalization is not the issue, and I would say it's not the issue because we passed a decriminalization law in 2013. Your client, Smart Approaches on Marijuana, opposed that bill. Kevin Sabet and Patrick Kennedy came up and lobbied against it. And so, I'm glad that you're now, I guess, in favor of decriminalization, but that's been the policy in Vermont for 3 years. People said the sky would fall when that passed, and instead, I think there's widespread agreement from what I've heard in the testimony that it's been a positive, but the problem is we haven't done anything about the supply side. We've said we're not going to criminalize consumers. We commissioned a report that says there are something like 80,000 Vermonters who use marijuana on a regular basis, but there's no legal way for them to obtain it. If they grow a couple of plants, that's a felony. If they buy it from somebody, that person's committing a felony, and we wind up creating a system where we incentivize illicit drug trafficking, and we make Vermont a less safe place across the board. Prohibition has been a disaster. We can talk about different ways of ending it, but we have to talk about a legal supply for marijuana.
Huh.
Can we have that conversation?
Yes, we can have the conversation, but the current bill that was passed by the Senate, you know, goes way too far and sets up not just a legalized marijuana, it sets up a commercialized system and a regulatory system in which creates a whole new industry. And Ken, you've been around long enough to know whether it's big tobacco, big pharmaceutical, big whatever, this industry is going to be controlled by not, you know, the Hunger Mountain Co-op in Montpelier. It's going to be controlled by Wall Street and big investors. And I think that's a direction that the state doesn't want to go.
Well, I'm glad you bring up the specifics of the bill. The bill requires that the businesses that apply for these licenses be Vermont-owned and be Vermont-financed. The bill the Senate passed doesn't even allow out-of-state money to be used to finance these operations, let alone Wall Street. That's just another disingenuous argument that your organization continues to make to postpone this serious policy discussion.
Well, all right. So there you have it. Now let's hear from the people that count, the public that we asked to invite to join us on the program by calling toll-free, the Adirondacks, the Green Mountains, and the White Mountains. And Peter from Waitsfield is taking advantage of the opportunity. Peter?
Good morning. First, any critique or examination of our current crisis with regards to drugs in general has to be taken in the context of our current prohibitionist policy, which basically says, okay, well, if you've got a hammer in your toolbox, then every problem is a nail. And the hammer is the criminal justice system. We live in a nation of laws, and the current prohibitionist idea has problems, namely that we rely on the threat of the criminal sanction to prevent people from doing bad things. Now, the threat of the criminal sanction is useful when it comes to things like severe penalties for adults who provide alcohol or marijuana or whatever to minors. That's an effective use of the threat of the criminal sanction. But when it comes to someone making a large profit from an illicit drug trade activity, it fuels a criminal network. Marijuana is the most widely used illicit drug in the United States, and it always will be until it becomes legalized. And until that day happens, we're going to have a criminal network supplying the consumers. And anybody who wants to examine our history with alcohol prohibition will find it was a disastrous policy that actually led to an increase in alcohol use.
Kevin, Alice, your turn.
But that doesn't – I have some agreement with that, right? I mean, the prohibition, you know, prohibition doesn't work per se, but that doesn't mean that government should sanction a completely new system of regulated and commercializing this product to promote it to the public, especially kids.
So you're saying stop and set up a committee?
Yeah. So there's a commission in the bill. I don't like the commission because it's controlled by Governor Shumlin, who gets to appoint, I think, 4 of the 7 slots, and therefore it's going to be his commission. And he's for this. But, study it longer. We have lots of information. We can wait for Colorado and Washington and see what happens. For once, Vermont could perhaps wait to see what other states around us do. For instance, Massachusetts, which has it on the ballot, an upcoming ballot measure. Let's see what they do. Let's study it more and try to avoid mistakes that we've made in the past when we've tried to go first.
The voice of Kevin Ellis. And now the person for Matt Simon.
I mean, What would you like me to respond to, Ken? I mean, there's so much floating out here. We have a bill that's passed the Senate. It's in the House. They've spent hundreds of hours on it last year in the Senate studying this. There's an 80-page report from the Rand Corporation that the state paid for. There's been a great deal of study. Vermont has taken a thoughtful, very cautious, phased-in approach on marijuana policy dating back to 2004 when they passed the first medical marijuana law that was very limited. In 2007, they expanded the conditions a little bit. They added dispensaries a few years later. They decriminalized. And then for the last couple years, there's been this serious discussion, and it's been a statewide discussion. And I think Vermonters should be proud of this discussion. In other states, it's taken a vote of the people to make legislators have to come into a room and talk about this. And in Vermont, legislators have taken the lead. They've studied it. The Senate's determined that they are ready to move forward. The House, it's very close. But Vermont definitely seems ready to me. There have been four polls statewide in a row showing clear majority support for this reform. Support, the opposition dwindles. And I think that's what we're going to continue seeing. The only demographic that continues to oppose this is 65 and older. Young voters are overwhelmingly tolerant of marijuana use and overwhelmingly supportive of legalization.
65 and over.
That's how they do the breakdowns in the polls. So they tend to make 65 up and up a category. And even there, the support has increased. It's nearly 50-50 there. I think there's a massive cultural shift underway in the state and this country.
The voice of Matt Simon. Kevin Ellis.
Well, I think that, you know, I think that backlash is about the injustices of the criminal justice system, the overreach of the criminal justice system on this and other issues. But I think there's going to be backlash 3.0 when we get more science about the use of marijuana. It's a psychotropic drug. John Brumstead, the CEO of UVM Medical Center, says, why should we be introducing another mind-altering drug into the system? I think this, what Matt is raising, are legitimate issues. We should study them. But why do we need to go there this year? Let's wait for Massachusetts, Colorado, and Washington and see what happens with teenage marijuana use rates in Colorado over the next few years before we make a decision.
I don't think we have that luxury. I think Vermont is in the throes of a serious drug crisis now. It's an opiate and opioid crisis. We've heard testimony from law enforcement that they're overwhelmed and inundated with that problem, that they're not enforcing marijuana laws. They're not looking for plants. They're not flying helicopters anymore. They're not even trying to enforce the marijuana laws. And as a result, it creates a situation where you incentivize, make it very lucrative for people to go into the marijuana business illegally. These are people who do not check IDs when they sell marijuana. They don't care if you're 21 or not. And many of them are trying to make as much money as possible, which means that they would like to branch out into other substances, perhaps, that are much more lucrative. I think separating the marijuana market from the market for hard drugs is something that Vermont needs to do as quickly as possible so that Vermont's 80,000 marijuana consumers are not put into contact with illicit drug dealers on a regular basis. To me, that's just common sense, and we need to do it as quickly as we can.
We're keeping Bill waiting, old friend Bill. I'm sure you've both heard about Bill from Barry. I guess we can do it. How many commercials have I messed up so far? Oh, good. I'm perfectly. Bill, your turn.
Good morning, Ken. Good morning to your guests. I'm going to start off by saying I was at a meeting where there were over 60 people there. And there was somebody at that meeting pushing the legalization of marijuana, which I am 100% against. I got up and asked the question, how many people in this room can honestly say that they haven't been harmed by somebody in their family having drugs? One couple raised their hand. I want to say this. The use of drugs is considered. I'm a user. If I'm not. I've never touched them. But the use of drugs is considered a non-victim. There's no victims to the use of drugs. Baloney. Are the members of everybody's family that has that takes drugs is a victim. People are victims because they don't. It hurts the family bad, the parents especially. But also, the people who take drugs steal from strangers. They steal from their family. They steal from the older members of the family who may be a little senile so that they can get the money. And I've heard this actually said, oh, I'm desperate. Give me the money. I'll get it back to you in a couple of days. Never got it back. But it's not the money as much as it's the torment that it does to the family. And you say that marijuana, oh, yes, we'll make it cheaper for the drug dealers. Well, what's happening with heroin? More people are getting heroin now because it is cheaper, and it's horrible. And marijuana leads to this thing. So all I can say is the people who are, and there's a lot of businesses, I've heard the other side, and I'm not talking about the other side, but so you've heard that too. You've heard it from doctors and from people who have taken statistics from Colorado. I can't get into that. I can get into the harm that drugs do, any kind of drugs, including alcohol, which you've talked about, which is legal. It's legal, but look at all the people who are harmed by alcohol.
So do you want to bring prohibition back, Bill?
I didn't ask that. That would be hard to do.
You bet.
That would be impossible to do. It did not work. But right now, let's not make it worse by allowing another drug that is harmful. And the police themselves said it's harder to check the DWI. How many people in this state, all over the country, have been harmed by people using any kind of mind-altering drug?
Thank you, Bill. All right, Matt Salmon.
Yeah, this might be some area where Kevin and I actually do have common ground. I think everybody who's participating in this policy discussion in any serious way is concerned about drug abuse and drug addiction and Vermont's problems in that area. I'm also glad the caller brought up alcohol being a drug. I grew up in the 80s. It was just say no, any drug use we have to intolerate, but alcohol and tobacco weren't considered drugs at all. Those are by far the biggest killers of the whole drug pantheon. So I think we've come a long way in that regard. I just think it's unfortunate that this caller can't differentiate between marijuana, which has never caused a fatal overdose, which according to all of the literature is less addictive than alcohol, is not associated with violence like alcohol, and we could go on and on. It's objectively less harmful. It's certainly not harmless or safe or the cure for every ailment. But we need to get to an educated place in this state, in this country, where we're talking about the same thing here. Some people seem to think marijuana is completely harmless, and others think it belongs in the same bucket with heroin. And I'm pleased to see that changing, in part as a result of this policy conversation.
Thoughts of Matt Simon. Kevin Ellis.
You know, you're raising, there's a libertarian streak that runs through this state, right? And the governor reflects it, actually. He's got that a little bit of that streak in it, too. It's surprising to me that the so-called home grow piece of this legislation is not going forward, right? You want to grow a plant out on the back 40 and smoke it around your campfire with, your buddies on a Saturday night. That's an area where I think some people can agree. Law enforcement's not going to agree, because I think a plant, I'm no expert on this, but you grow a plant, two plants, that's a lot more pot than you can just smoke around the fire, around the fire pit. But it's clear that the House and Senate don't want to do that. I think strategically that's been left for the commission in the bill. I think the governor thinks he can get that down the road, so he doesn't want to have that political fight. But Bill from Barry raises, good points. I mean, whether it's legal or not, it's a drug, it's a problem, it's dangerous, it leads people in bad, down bad paths. And I think we should, instead of spending millions of dollars creating a new regulatory system, hiring a bunch of new state cops, and doing, you know, forcing the Appropriations Committee to find a bunch of money that they don't have, let's do more education. Let's figure out a way to show people what the real facts around marijuana are so that we can go on from there.
Floor is open.
Kevin, I'm just curious to know that if a bill did pass a committee in this state that legalized a plant or two and limited possession, would your organization support that?
Probably not, because the police officers and chiefs in our coalition that we deal with say that it creates a burden that they're not ready for. Would we support it down the road? Could be, but not this year.
How do you feel? We're waiting for your phone call. And the number again, 877-291-8255. More after this. Again it, for it, the issue of marijuana rising here, moving right along as far as Montpelier is concerned, and then serious reservations. They're represented by Kevin Ellis, and Matt Simon is trying to move this along as rapidly as he can, the policy for the use of marijuana and sale thereof in Vermont. For certain, we have somebody. Oh, Fred in Moncton. Forgive me, Fred. I looked right at it and didn't pay attention. Fred, good morning.
Morning.
Yes.
Good morning, Ken. What is the gentleman afraid of this little green plant for, this little beautiful ganja plant that God gave us? I've been smoking for 45 years. I have never run into the problems that this fella is talking about. I live a normal, regular life, just like a lot of people do. I own businesses. People work for me on and off. I had 50 people working for me at one time. This plant is a beautiful, beautiful thing we have. And I just can't understand why adult men are scared of this thing. I just don't get it. I really don't get it. I smoke every day. I've smoked every day for 45 years. And it's a beautiful thing. As Bob Marley said, it keeps the aches and pains of life at arm's distance away. And it's not a vicious, vicious drug. It's a beautiful drug. And the fellow who is talking against it probably has never used much of it or has not used the correct type of it. So I'm going to let the show go on. Thanks for letting me speak.
Well, thank you for your call, Fred. That's well done. So Kevin Ellis.
Well, I'm certainly not going to go back and talk to Fred about my college days. I don't think any of us want to do that.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to a small liberal arts college in western Massachusetts called Amherst College.
Oh, that guy.
Sorry. Yeah, he's a terrible guy. Yeah. The smallpox guy.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
I don't begrudge Fred his ability, his desire to smoke dope every day. I have that libertarian streak too. But when you create a system and a regulatory system that is going to start promoting it and an industry that's going to lobby for it and lobby for changes to it and run this industry in the state, I think that's a different thing than Fred doing it on his own every day.
Yeah. We hear your voice. Matt Simon.
I'd just like to reply to Fred's mention of the aches and pains aspect of this, because I think it's very important. As we know, chronic pain is a common affliction that affects Vermonters and Americans, and opioids have for many years been prescribed for chronic pain, leading in large part to the heroin epidemic that we're currently embroiled in. There's a great deal of research and a growing body of research that indicates that cannabis is beneficial in treating chronic pain. Vermont's medical marijuana law is so restrictive in that regard. You have to have severe pain that is considered intractable. You have to have tried basically everything else, which in the context of pain means to me, and I think most people, that you've been prescribed opioids and you have to have a relationship with your physician for 6 months before that physician can recommend marijuana for you. So we hear all the time from patients who say, I've been prescribed every opiate there is. If I have cannabis, I'm able to use way less of them, sometimes even eliminate my use of opioids. I'm able to sleep through the night. And they can't qualify through this medical marijuana law. And that's one of the real senses of urgency here for me. 2,500 patients are able to go to state-regulated dispensaries, buy products that they know don't have pesticides, heavy metals, molds. They know the THC content. They even know the content of the other cannabinoids. They're able to talk to somebody who understands the product that can help them use it. I want that for everybody in Vermont who consumes cannabis. I don't want them to buy from illicit drug dealers green plant matter in a plastic bag when they can be buying a regulated product with some consumer safety education and knowledge built into that. And I think people are afraid of the opiate problem, but this regulating marijuana can actually help that problem in a number of ways, and this is one of those ways.
I think that scares a lot of people. That is one of the frights, that it stair steps into other things, and that we get such pressure from outside the state that keeps showing up in Rutland and Burlington, St. Johnsbury, name your place where there's folks and people are concerned.
Oh, I understand that concern. I just think we've heard the gateway theory for so many people. Marijuana can be a gateway back after they're dependent on opioids. And for many people, if cannabis helps them treat their chronic pain, they may never be prescribed that opioid in the first place. So it's well understood that cannabis is less addictive and far less likely to cause serious harm in somebody's life than opiates. We should be making it widely available for chronic pain so people don't have to move on to the opioids.
Kevin, what do you think?
I'm no doctor, but don't we have the ability to deal with that? It seems to me the existing law, if you need to update existing medical marijuana laws, let's do that. I just don't think government should be in the business of promoting marijuana for recreational use.
Matt, agree or disagree on that?
I don't use the word recreational. We don't talk about recreational bourbon. I don't think it's helpful to talk about cannabis in this context. I think most adults who are consuming cannabis are doing it because they want to feel better or they want to feel less bad. And in so many of those cases, it is a minor ailment, something they couldn't qualify for the medical marijuana law for, but they feel like cannabis helps their minor pains, their anxiety, their insomnia, whatever the case may be. So I don't want to call those people recreational users. And as far as trying to expand the medical marijuana law, we have advocated for that. We tried to get it expanded to cover post-traumatic stress disorder, and that was rejected. There are combat veterans and victims of violent crime in Vermont who are using cannabis to treat PTSD, and they have to buy it from criminals. I don't think that's right at all.
Did you say we had another call? Oh, Brian in South Royalton. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. I am a non-user who is for legalization, and I've got a couple of points. One is the argument that if it's available, more people will consume it or will buy it. To me, doesn't work because I walk by Snickers bars every time I go in the store and I don't buy them, and tobacco, cigarettes, are widely available every store in the state, and the usage in cigarettes has dropped dramatically in the last 10 years. And the other point is that marijuana being a gateway drug only works if the people going to buy their marijuana go to somebody named Guido on a corner who then says, hey, I got something else I'd like you to try. If it's regulated, if it's marketed, if it's put in stores where people can come purchase it cleanly from your neighborhood store, I understand that it's going to be in, you know, special dispensaries. But if they can buy it from people they know, and we know where it's coming from, and we know who's trucking it and where it's coming and going, a lot less chance of somebody who is using marijuana is going to get exposed to a speed, a heroin, an opioid. That's my point.
Thought?
I don't think you want it.
Kevin.
I don't think you want it at the South Royalton Co-op or a dispensary in South Royalton where Brian lives. Because then they're going to get in the car and they're going to drive up 89 to Burlington, and they're going to be under the influence. And I think that among many other issues, is a huge problem.
Well, they're driving up and down that interstate now, and liquored up, and we can't keep track of that. That's for sure.
It's true. So let's spend the $40 million that we spent on cigarettes to educate people about the negative impacts and consequences of this, of using this kind of drug. We have won the battle against cigarettes. Cigarettes is now, you're a loser if you're a smoker, right? It's not mm-hmm. cool anymore.
Yeah, right.
Let's spend the money that we want to spend, what the governor wants to spend on this. Let's take that money and spend it on education.
I certainly agree. It's wonderful that we've won the war on cigarettes, and we've made them uncool. And we've done that without arresting a single adult for his or her choice, without fining a single adult for his or her choice to smoke. And we've done it in a context where tobacco is available in every gas station in the state. You only got to be 18. People have decided they don't want tobacco, and I think that's terrific. With marijuana, we could do a much better job, but we can't. We have to do the education. And where does the money come from to do the education if all the money is going to the illicit drug dealers? That's the point. Tax it, regulate it, spend the money where it makes sense.
The point was Matt Simons. Kevin Ellis is here. We'll take a final break and then come back and wrap it up for today. Thank you, gentlemen. This is going well. Hello. We're just about there in concluding, and I want to thank Matt Simon, New England political director for the Marijuana Policy Project, lives in
Montpelier,
and Kevin Ellis, lobbyist for SAM Action, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, who lives in?
I live in East Montpelier, just 5 miles north of town.
Yeah.
Not too far.
Well, just far enough to the left okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for both coming by. Closing comment?
Oh, thank you for having us, Ken. Regardless what happens in the next few weeks here in the House, I'm very confident Vermont is moving out of the prohibition era into an era where we're going to sensibly regulate marijuana. I really hope it happens this year, that we get S-241 passed in some form that gets the ball rolling and ends this prohibition.
Spend more time. Don't rush. You don't need to be first. Find out what the other states are doing. Let's wait a few years.
Wow. Well, there you have it. It's our project. Yep. Because it's up there in Montpelier, and you have a voice in what comes out of there. And we really do. It's not like voting for presidents, for God's sake. All right. Thank both of you for coming by.
Thank you.
Isn't that an irritant, watching these bozos? Oh, my Lord. Tomorrow morning, a dear friend, an attorney who darn near lost his life after a tick bite, and then got very seriously interested in knowing more about what that is all about. He'll be with us on the program. And thank you for being here on WDEV, all of you.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.